Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service. This is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from several sources. I'm going to start with an article from AARP, the magazine, entitled The New Rules of Email. How you begin an email can make a big difference. An email from someone I didn't know landed in my inbox. It started, "I hope this finds you well." I considered responding, "Actually, I'm not well. Last week I had a medical procedure that went badly, and I ended up in the hospital. Want to hear more?" I thought better of that response. These phrases have become the digital equivalent of a fake smile, says Cheryl Clark, founder of Phenomenal Writing, a communications consulting firm. Most messages aren't written with the recipient in mind, and this phrase reminds us of that. Worse, if someone truly isn't doing well, this email feels disconnected. So, what should we write instead? When crafting an email, every word counts, says Bethany Sorkel, an etiquette coach and founder of The Charming Diplomat. It's best to go with an opening line that addresses the matter at hand. Some examples. "I'm looking forward to working with you." Sets the tone for a business collaboration. "I attended," conference name, "and received your contact information from," parentheses, "mutual acquaintance." This puts your mutual contact's name in the first sentence so the recipient won't think the email is spam. "I follow you on LinkedIn and was intrigued by your latest post on," parentheses, "topic." This might flatter the recipient and uses specifics. "It's wonderful to meet another blank," insert description, term that clarifies your bond, such as a school you both attended, and this emphasizes a commonality. Common openers to avoid. "It's nice to meet you virtually." Not funny and conveys a lack of professionalism. "I hope you don't mind me reaching out to you directly." Sounds overly passive and minimizes what follows in the email. "I'd like to offer my services." Reads like a copy and paste. And finally, "I saw you at blank location and knew I had to reach out." It has an underlying stalking tone. Can be improved by including the reason for reaching out. Now I'm going to AARP The Bulletin under the heading of Your Health, The Dangers of Hidden Caffeine. Highly caffeinated energy drinks have been the subject of wrongful death lawsuits. Here's what to know about caffeine and why older people are at greater risk. And this is by Kelsey Ogletree. When 73-year-old Bob V. stopped at a cafe near Huntsville, Alabama, he decided to try one of the orange mango refreshers he had heard people raving about. The tall drink was sweet, fizzy, and refreshing on that hot July afternoon. Halfway through his cup, however, he noticed he was feeling irritable and jittery, and it only got worse from there. "I couldn't fall asleep the whole night," he said. "I could have danced the Charleston at 2 a.m. In the United States, an 8-ounce cup of coffee delivers about 95 milligrams of caffeine. Unknowingly, Bob, who normally avoids all forms of caffeine, had downed the caffeine equivalent of nearly 3 cups of coffee in a matter of minutes. The barrage of highly caffeinated drinks, often marketed as lemonade-style beverages that have appeared on drive-through menus lately, may look delicious and even seem healthy, but they can cause unwanted and even dangerous side effects for consumers unaware of what they're drinking. In 2023, a 46-year-old man went into cardiac arrest and died after drinking a Panera Bread-charged lemonade, which reportedly contained 390 milligrams of caffeine. In 2022, a 21-year-old with a heart condition died after downing the same drink. The chain removed the lemonade from its menu in May 2024, but other supercharged soft drinks such as Dunkin's Energy and Starbucks Ice Energy may have more than 200 milligrams of caffeine. Many energy drinks offerings at other chains such as Scooter's Coffee Scoot Energy don't publish caffeine content, making it difficult to know how much caffeine you're drinking. Several fast food chains, including Taco Bell and Jack in the Box, also offer high-caffeine soft drinks. At the gas station, you might pick up a can of Rockstar Focus, Celsius Essentials, G Fuel, or Bang Energy, each of which delivers 200 to 300 milligrams. These drinks may promise a quick pick-me-up, but for older Americans and those with certain health conditions, they can present real dangers. What is caffeine? To an extent, it's the most used drug in the world, says Amit Shah, MD, a geriatrician with the Mayo Clinic in Scottsdale, Arizona. People wake up with a cup of coffee or tea around the world, and in general, this is safe in moderation, he says. Caffeine can also be found in many sodas, as well as hot chocolate, chocolate bars, and chocolate-flavored foods. Some studies have shown that caffeine may be beneficial to your health, too, reducing your risk of developing Parkinson's disease, dementia, and Alzheimer's disease, among other benefits. About 30 to 40 minutes after drinking a beverage with caffeine, you usually feel an energy boost, depending on what the drink is and how it's prepared, says Shaw. For instance, a shot of espresso or a highly concentrated energy drink like those found in gas stations will hit your bloodstream faster than a drink with added protein, such as a cappuccino. According to the Food and Drug Administration, 400 milligrams of caffeine is considered the safe daily amount for healthy adults. It can be tricky to track exactly how much you're ingesting, though. Caffeine content varies widely depending on how a drink is prepared, and it's not a requirement for food or beverages to list caffeine content on their labels. Why caffeine can be problematic for older adults? As we get older, our bodies become more sensitive to the effects of caffeine. Even smaller amounts of caffeine are not tolerated as much as we age, says Sarah Christine Ruff, MD, a primary care physician with UNC Health in Durham, North Carolina. This happens for a variety of reasons, including changing body composition, renal function, and enzyme levels. In one study, coffee drinkers between the ages of 65 and 70 took 33% longer to metabolize caffeine than did the younger participants, meaning that the effects of the caffeine are amplified and last longer. Smoking and certain medications also increase the time needed to metabolize caffeine, says Stacey Woodson, a registered dietitian based in Philadelphia. You know the telltale signs when you've had too much caffeine: irritability, feeling jittery, insomnia. Unfortunately, the only remedy is to wait it out. You have to let your body metabolize it, she says. However, if you ingest a very high level of caffeine, have a health condition, or take a medication that makes you particularly sensitive to caffeine, you may experience symptoms including heart racing, heart palpitations, irregular heartbeats, feeling agitated and anxious to the point of wanting to crawl out of your skin, or even having a panic attack, Shaw says. If you experience these symptoms, get to a hospital. Since caffeine decreases blood clotting, it may interact with other drugs that do the same, such as warfarin, aspirin, or NSAIDs. It can also reduce the efficacy of certain drugs used to treat diabetes, depression, and thyroid problems. Ask your doctor about what a safe caffeine consumption level is for you. Who should avoid highly caffeinated beverages? Older adults with these specific health conditions need to be especially mindful of caffeine consumption and avoid highly caffeinated drinks. Osteoporosis. Studies have shown that caffeine's metabolites, what caffeine is broken down into, can cause calcium loss and increase the risk of osteoporosis. Another recent study shows that caffeine ingestion and its metabolites are associated with potential bone health issues in postmenopausal women. Cardiovascular conditions. Anyone with heart arrhythmia, including atrial fibrillation, should avoid highly caffeinated beverages entirely, says Ruff. Both conditions can cause your heart to race, leading to severe complications and even death when exacerbated by excess amounts of caffeine. High blood pressure. This condition becomes more common as people age, and caffeine can raise it further. Diabetes. Anyone with diabetes should avoid highly caffeinated drinks with added sugar, says Ruff. Sleep disturbances. Older adults are more likely to have sleep problems than the general public, and caffeine can amplify these issues by increasing the time it takes to fall asleep and decreasing the duration and quality of sleep. The bottom line. If you like caffeine, stick to coffee and tea, avoiding the processed sugar and high caffeine content found in energy drinks. If you're feeling as though you need an energy drink to get through the day, talk with your doctor about your sleep and other factors that may be causing you to feel tired. And here's a sidebar, health benefits without the buzz. Coffee has been linked to plenty of positive outcomes, but if you're looking to cut down on caffeine, there's good news. Decaf can deliver many of the same health boosters. Even decaf coffee contains more than 100 biologically active, good-for-you components that can help prevent diabetes. A 2021 study in the journal Nutrients found that drinking coffee, including decaf, on a regular basis may help people with pre-diabetes from progressing to full-blown diabetes. Both types of coffee are jam-packed with phytochemicals that cut diabetes risk, says registered dietitian Jill Weisenberger. It might reduce your heart risk. A study in the European Journal of Preventive Cardiology found that 2 to 3 cups of coffee per day, decaf or regular, reduces cardiovascular disease risk. And it might extend your life. The same study found that 2 to 3 cups of decaf daily reduce the risk of dying from any cause. And another sidebar, master the nappuccino. To combat the circadian dip we typically experience around 2 p.m., without overdoing caffeine, Shaw suggests a nappuccino. Drink 1 cup of coffee with milk added to slow its absorption, then lie down for a power nap. As the caffeine hits your bloodstream 30 minutes later, you now have the boost of caffeine alertness along with the amazing boost you get from the power nap. Now, also from the bulletin, let's look at your health. Ask Dr. Adam. A top internist and cardiologist answers your questions with surprising doctor-tested tips. I'm afraid of falling. Are there ways I can improve my balance? Dr. Adam. Balance is the key to preventing falls, and it naturally deteriorates as we get older. The good news is that it's never too late to gain it back. My 90-year-old mother is a good example. She was a ballet dancer who worked on balance for most of her life. As she aged, her balance worsened. But recently, she restarted her efforts, and the results are impressive. Several effective exercises can promote better balance, and we do them together a few times a week. Standing on one leg and counting for 5 seconds is the simplest exercise. If you're younger, you can try it for longer. But my favorite is a game we call the clock. Here's how we do it. She starts out with both feet firmly placed on a level, uncarpeted floor and imagines she's standing in the middle of a big clock. I call out, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and so on. She lifts one foot, extends her leg, and puts her foot on the hour of the clock, then returns her foot to the center. As we go around the clock, she has the choice of using her right or left leg. It's a particularly good activity because she's working on her balance. She's also engaging her brain, which is crucial for balance. I also recommend yoga, Tai Chi, Pilates, and weight training. These practices work on balance and improve strength. Strong muscles help to keep us steady and support us. This brings me to the importance of anticipating places that could lead to a fall. According to most studies, they're in your own home. To prevent accidents, have grab bars installed in your bathroom. You don't want to reach for a towel rod that might loosen and drop to the floor when you need something to hold on to. Check that all your carpets are firmly attached to the floor. Put no-slip strips on tile or wood stairs, and be sure that handrails are sturdy. Keep the pathway to your bathroom lit at night, and pots and pans in your kitchen within easy reach. As you get older, you'll want to pay more attention to how you're walking. The other day, I observed a patient stumbling a little as he walked into my office. I told him it's time to get a cane. His response was not unusual. I don't want a cane. I'm too embarrassed. I wanted him to get the message, so I was firm and said, "You're going to be a lot more embarrassed if you fall and break something and end up in a wheelchair or you need a walker." If you notice your gait isn't as steady as it used to be, I suggest getting a prescription for physical therapy. A therapist will work on your balance and strength and evaluate whether you need a cane. It's a much better idea to be proactive than to wait for a fall to happen. In the same vein, I strongly promote keeping up with your annual exams. Problems with your vision, inner ear, or sense of touch in your feet or ankles can all contribute to an unsteady gait. These are things that your doctors will check. We all want to be at ease getting around in our world. If you commit to working on your balance and strength, keeping your home safe, paying attention to how you're walking, and getting annual exams, you'll be able to put the fear of falling behind you. And again, this was by Adam B. Rosenbluth, MD. He practices and teaches in New York City. Each Monday, online, he answers your questions about how to make your body work better for you. Moving on to the next article from Psychology Now, take control of your mind for a happier, healthy life. The impact of living life online, working from home, specializing via Zoom, and minimal face-to-face contact were things we all had to adapt to during the COVID-19 pandemic. Here, the experts tell us how lockdown affected our brains. We might be equally grown adults, fully grown adults, but our brains never stop changing or developing in response to our experiences. So it stands to reason that the matter of living through a pandemic, with all of its emotional, social, and practical implications, will have had an impact on our brains. Dr. Peter Gallagher is a senior lecturer in neuropsychology at Newcastle University. He explains, the brain is very plastic and adaptable. It's going through changes all the time. Connections are constantly made and pruned. That's how our memories are formed, by making and breaking connections. It's a very dynamic organ. So although we did far less back in 2020 than our normal lives would usually have dictated, our brains continue to react and reshape according to what we were doing. Even doing the majority of our communications on apps like Zoom has actually changed our brains. Every experience we go through causes some degree of change within the brain, says Dr. Gallagher. There are millions and millions of connections, and they alter in response to our experiences. What we went through during the pandemic was, depending on the individual, a period of high or low stress. Stress elevates certain chemicals in the body, and those chemicals can change things in the brain. Cortisol, sometimes called the stress hormone, is one of these chemicals, and it reacts to stress. So if we are chronically worried our cortisol levels are probably higher than they would be if things weren't like this. We need cortisol to make memories, but if levels are too high or too low, that can cause problems for memory and also affect our mood. Making memories. If you found you struggled to stay motivated or focused during the pandemic, or found your days all blurring into one, that's because our memories weren't forming as they usually would. The circumstances of lockdown affected the brain's ability to make and store memories, basically because we hadn't done anything different for such a long period of time. During the pandemic, Dr. Gallagher explained, ordinarily, you might have a fixed routine Monday to Friday, but your week is punctuated with events, whether it's seeing friends or going to the gym or taking a different route to work. Every day is a bit different, and those rich experiences allow us to remember things better. By being in the same four walls, week in, week out, we're losing that richness, which is why the day feels as though they blend into one. No small talk, big impact. Thanks to the majority of us working from home and doing most of our socializing over screens, the way we communicated altered, as we had to work harder to connect via screens and read others' reactions. Without face-to-face communication, a natter at the school gates or water cooler at work, there was an absence of chatter in our lives, which might sound inconsequential, but is a building block for communication. The lack of opportunity for exchanging niceties in person could have affected our confidence and concentration. Dr. Rudkin, clinical psychologist and co-author of What's My Teenager Thinking with Tanith Carey, said that as communication became very functional online, with emails becoming more brusque and conversations becoming very goal-based, many of us were missing out on the social niceties and bonding experiences of small talk. A lot of the psychological strokes we get from everyday work experiences, such as a chat around the kettle or sharing a funny story over lunch, are now missing. And this can leave people feeling less confident and more anxious than before. This can all have a knock-on effect on our concentration, empathy, and self-esteem. As online interaction became the norm, plenty of us felt brain strain as we logged on for hours of screen time with little interpersonal contact. Our brains are highly complex systems designed to take in thousands of stimuli every minute, says Dr. Rudkin. Socializing and working online takes away a lot of the cues we would normally pick up on, meaning we have to work harder to function. Anecdotal evidence suggests that people feel more tired after being on screens and social interactions are less satisfying. So that's why we feel so drained and unfulfilled after another meeting online or at the prospect of a Zoom quiz. Screens versus sleep. Many people struggle with sleep, either from an occasional bad night or an ongoing issue. Dr. Russell reminds us how vital sleep is to our brain health. When we sleep, our brains perform unique tasks that can only happen when we are asleep. Broken sleep impacts how we deal with stress, our appetite, and our memory, and risk of Alzheimer's disease. Sleep also has a direct relationship to the presence of feel-good dopamine chemicals in the brain. If we don't get enough sleep or our rest is disturbed, dopamine levels will drop, affecting our anxiety level. Since the pandemic and our lives moved on online, it's not uncommon to spend hours in front of a screen, to then switch to video calls to socialize, and then plug into a film to relax. We then may struggle to get to sleep. Ongoing exposure to blue light from screens can affect our natural melatonin production, the hormone that has an important role in our ability to fall asleep at night. Excessive exposure to screens can suppress melatonin, therefore making it harder for us to sleep. Dr. Russell recommends avoiding screens during the evening and ensuring you see some daylight in order to keep your body's circadian rhythm, our body's clock, functioning. And be kind. It might sound like a platitude, but according to Dr. Russell, acts of kindness can really have a direct impact on the health of our brains. Our brains have mirror neuron brain cells that mirror the behavior and emotion that we see. Noticing acts of kindness, as well as being kind ourselves, are ways we can help our brain and emotional health. If you found yourself feeling particularly gleeful at the prospect of receiving a takeaway or waving at a friend from a distance, it's because it's our new parameter of joy, explains Dr. Russell. The small things have become the big things during this experience for most of us. We have had to alter our behaviors and how we find joy during this experience. The excitement of a delivery, sending a postcard to a friend, or the joy at seeing a neighbor or a friendly face. And one of the sidebars is preparing for re-entry. If our brains weren't making memories at the same rate and our concentration levels were impaired during the pandemic, how did we react when the world opened up again and we could experience normal life a bit more? A return to society certainly felt overwhelming for some, but to others it felt like a celebration. Dr. Gallagher said it would be on a case-by-case basis because how we all adapt is a very individual thing. While some of us fitted straight back into life, for others it felt awkward. Initially, people were potentially carrying a virus, so many of us were a little bit nervous and acting with caution. But things slotted back in as we picked these skills up again. Well, we were reading about Stop Paying for Storage in AARP, the Bulletin. And I have a few left here. Not very many, though. Crafting supplies. If you plan to use it, put it in a clear bin and take it back to your house, Blumenfield says. But very often people say, those are my grandmother's knitting needles. Ask yourself questions about why you are actually holding on to this stuff. And musical instruments. You might think these are valuable, but they're probably not. Those might be more susceptible to damage if the environment isn't controlled, Poplin says. Pass it along to someone who can use it. Good suggestions here. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.